This is News Talk Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards. Jim is off sick tonight, hopefully back tomorrow. In the meantime, though, for the next hour and a half, I am here, and we've got a really cool interview for you today. So this summer, I hosted a panel of true crime authors, and one had written a book about the Don Jail, which is kind of an infamous jail here in Toronto. Another one wrote a book called The Beetle Bandit, which was a story about a bank robber that wore a beetle wig and robbed a number of banks. And the other was Slava Pastuk, who is the co-author of a book called Bad Trips. And that is a book that recounts how he went from an editor for Vice Media to being sentenced to 9 years in prison for recruiting friends into a scheme to smuggle cocaine into the U.S. Or from the U.S. into Australia. And it's a fascinating story. It's a great book. You can find it now wherever you buy fine books. And what I thought was really interesting is, as I was reading the Slava's introduction, I was saying, Slava Pastuk is, and he leaned forward and said, a criminal, into the microphone before I got a chance to say, co-author of a book and all that kind of thing. So I thought it would be interesting in this section where we have this Ask a Blank Anything that we bring in Slava and let him answer some questions from me and hopefully take a few questions from you out there as well. The number to call is 855-633-1010, or you can text us at 71010. Slava, how are you?
Richard, I'm good. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. You're right. We met at Fan Expo. I remember you had a Gandalf costume on, which was very detailed.
Well, it's the hat. It's the hat that everyone remembers. Yeah,
it made you 7 feet tall. Yeah, you definitely stood out from the crowd.
But I was really sort of taken aback at that point where I was about to introduce you, and you leaned forward, and when I said Slava Pastuk is, and you went, a criminal, and it gave the panel a different tone than it might have had beforehand, but it was so kind of wonderfully open and interesting for you to set that up. At that point, you had only been out of jail for 3 or 4 months, I think.
That's right.
And so let's sort of take people back to the beginning of this story to give them the real bedrock of it, which was that you were writing for Vice, you were covering hip-hop and music, and you were in nightclubs a lot, and that sort of became a bigger part of this lifestyle for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the people that I had encountered through writing about music, the party promoters, the stuff like that, these are people who, you know, they're nightlife entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. and that overlaps pretty closely with criminal. And I think that's the reason that I don't really shy away from that label, because to me, after meeting such a variety of criminals after being in jail for 28 months, I was able to see that people who have been given that label by the court system are not necessarily bad people. They are actually just entrepreneurs taking advantage of the last bootstrap available to them in the society we live in now. And it's a bootstrap that a lot of people, mainly the state, thinks is not a right one. So
so that's selling drugs and things, right? Is that what you're saying?
Managing a supply chain of goods multiple countries. I guess it's all about how you spin it. Yeah,
absolutely. Richard? Absolutely. And you say, I wouldn't believe this story was true if I hadn't lived it myself. So you're there, you're working these nightclubs, you're meeting these people. Tell me what you can about what happened between the point at which you were writing music and then you ended up being arrested in Montreal.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty big span of years. Mm-hmm. So I was writing about music, and specifically what had happened is I kind of hit my ceiling on writing about specific artists, and I'd written some unfavorable things about specific big rappers in the city, so I was more or less blacklisted. So I figured, okay, well, let me find something else to do and something else to write about. And because of the fact that Vice kind of encourages culture of, you know, you go do a thing and then you go write about it,
right,
I stumbled upon these people who handle this international supply chain from the United States into Australia. I went on that trip the first chance I got. And I took that muling expedition myself, and I went to Australia. And you know what? Mission successful. It was a crazy trip. I outlined it completely in Bad Trips. I recommend everybody go buy that and check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came back, what happened was I told other people about it, and that's when everything kind of went south.
Because there was one person, really, that couldn't keep their mouth shut. Is that right?
I mean, I wouldn't say that. There's definitely one person who recorded the entire sequence of events. Mm-hmm. That didn't help things. But we were also like, well, me specifically, I'm not a very good criminal, right? That was my first time being a criminal. So I found out the hard way what to do and what not to do.
And you were arrested in Montreal in late 2018, where you had been living under a new name. What do you remember about that day?
I remember that I was specifically thinking after work, so I was working in a WeWork, and I remember having a beer in the little main area of the WeWork after, and thinking, you know, am I going to go work out today or not? You know, like, should I go to the gym or should I just stay home and watch something on Netflix? And I was listening to a podcast, and I'm walking into the lobby when all of a sudden I feel a tap on my arm, and a woman calls me by my old name. And at that point, I knew the jig was up. She arrested me. They put me in what was essentially a drunk tank in Montreal overnight. And then they actually put me on a private jet the next day to extradite me back to Ontario. Yeah.
Wow.
So that was my only time on a private jet. And I would like to thank the RCMP for the luxury of that venture.
So let's talk then a little bit about what happens. You were convicted. You spent, 28 months in jail?
That's right, 28 months. Canada has a very interesting system where you only really do two-thirds of your sentence, but if you're a really good boy, like I was, you get to be out in one-third of your sentence.
Right. And what was it like for you? You told me that day that we did this on-stage interview about you learned things. You learned a great deal by being in prison.
Oh, absolutely, because the thing that people have to understand is it's still Canadian prison, right? It's still Canadian prison. We still have, we're not treated barbarically. We have HBO, we have all the sports channels, we go grocery shopping, we have mini golf, there's barbecuing. But the fact is, when you do get all of those quote-unquote basic necessities of your life, and maybe a little bit of luxuries, you take a different type of thing for granted, right? Mostly, like, there's a lot of guys in prison, Richard, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this, but there's a lot of dudes there.
And so what sort of other criminal were you? Who were these other dudes that you were with?
Well, here's the interesting thing. The only reason that I was able to go to a minimum security facility was because I had no violence on my record.
Mm.
So other people can go there who have no violence on their record. So other drug-based criminals. But you also get people who have trickled down and cascaded through the system, starting from either a maximum security facility or a medium security facility.
Right.
And once you're in a minimum security facility, the biggest thing they have over you is the fact that they can send you to a medium facility. So you don't actually see a lot of the stuff that you do in movies where guys are making moonshine,
mm-hmm.
or people are walking around with sharpened pieces of aluminum foil, because it's not really worth it, because nobody wants to go back to medium. Everybody wants to stay in minimum and play mini golf.
I'm speaking with Slava Pastic. He's the author, co-author of Bad Trips, How I Went from Vice Reporter to International Drug Smuggler. And that book is available now wherever you buy fine books. It is a fascinating story. And we're talking with Slava now about what it's like to be in prison, how he got there. And I would like to hear from you if you have questions for him. The phone number to call is 855-633-1010, or you can text us at 71010. When we come back on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about what the experience of being in prison taught him, how he found the tone of the book, because it is such an interesting story to tell about yourself. I want to know how you found the tone of this book and how you see yourself today. There's lots of questions to come with Slava Pastic. Stay with me. I'm Richard Krause, in for Jim Richards on News Talk Tonight on the iHeart Talk Radio Network.
News News Talk Tonight is on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards. He'll be back when he's feeling better, which hopefully will be sooner rather than later. I'm hoping for tomorrow for him. We're speaking with a very special guest. Slava Pastuk is with me. He's the co-author of a memoir called Bad Trips, How I Went from Vice Reporter to International Drug Smuggler. And it is quite a story. We've laid out the groundwork of it in the first segment. If you have any questions for Slava, let me know at 855-633-1010, or you can text me at 71010. And it's the story, as the subtitle of the book says, a music editor advice who tried to become the coolest reporter the company ever had by becoming an international drug smuggler. That's the quote from one of the press releases for your book, Slava. Does that overstate things?
Yeah, I didn't write that. That was the publisher. Just want to be real, real clear. I did not write that. I wouldn't say I was trying to be the coolest. I was just trying to be successful.
Yeah.
You know, that's really what it came down to. The people around me at the time were doing things like going and talking to ISIS members or running around the Capitol building, shooting the recording people who were shooting it up. Mm-hmm. It was gonzo journalism in the 21st age. Or whatever age that it came up in.
Yeah, yeah. And it's very intoxicating to be kind of in and around all that, right? It must have been very exciting.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. Especially at like 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And, I immigrated to Canada when I was 4 years old from Kyiv, and we lived in Victoria Park. But I went to high school in Barrie, Ontario. So my life was at a much lower tempo than it was living in Parkdale, Toronto, where I'm meeting all of my favorite rappers, and I'm going to all my favorite parties, and I'm throwing parties, and no, it was intoxicating. That's a great word to use. And when you add the Vice culture to that, my ultimate goal was always, I want to move to New York.
Right.
I want to work for Vice New York. That was always the goal. And I feel like that is the goal of a lot of the people who worked at Vice Canada.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. Now, you only did the Las Vegas to Australia drug run once. Would you have wanted to do more?
Hell yeah, Richard. Come on, it's a free vacation. What are you talking about? Of course. Plus, listen, like, the time I did it, I was successful. Who knows what would happen the next time?
Yeah.
I know from personal experience that the plan is pretty foolproof. You just have to do a series of very unfortunate things in order for it to go wrong, which is unfortunately what happened in the case of this story that we're talking about right now. But I would have absolutely probably gone to Australia once a year. Yeah, probably 10 times by now, right? This happened almost, this happened like 9 years ago. So I would have gone to Australia 9 times by now.
Wow. And I mean, how do you see yourself today then? Do you look back, having written the book, and, you know, you've talked about the story, does it seem like another person, or how do you think of it today?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The person in my 20s that I was, if you read the book, it's kind of structured around the idea that, like, every chapter after a certain point introduces a new drug into my life, and that drug kind of takes over. And just the fact that right now I'm living a fairly sober life outside of occasional trips to the dispensary store, it's just a huge difference. Everything is at a much slower pace. You're able to kind of reflect on things. And in some ways, going to jail was kind of like going to therapy, because you have no phone to sink into. You have to talk the whole time. So,
and I suppose it's an introspective time as well. Do you find yourself isolated quite often? I mean, you're not in lockdown, but
I wish that I was isolated more, to be honest, Richard, because some of the people that I was around, the only thing I could hope for when I was around them was isolation. But no, like, once you got your own room, things are actually pretty even keeled, and you're able to kind of sit there and read and sharpen your mind and do your push-ups for sure. But no, isolation was kind of some like a luxury in jail, because when you are around people, the caliber of the people, I'm just going to stress again, is not the greatest.
Right, right. And how do you respond when people say, well, if you're in prison, it's just essentially a school for criminality? Did you find that to be true?
I mean, yeah, but the problem is that the federal government stopped investing in programs that kept prisoners' time busy, so they have nothing to do but talk to each other.
Right.
When I was there during COVID, a majority of the jobs were literally wiping doorknobs. Like,
right.
What is anybody supposed to take out of their time with that skill? Nothing. So all they're able to do is network and talk to people. And yeah, if they are entrepreneurially minded, they're going to make the connections that you probably don't want them to make. So I think the solution is actually more government funding. But unfortunately, that's the solution to a lot of stuff.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's the solution, I would say, to almost everything.
Exactly. Yeah, it's funny how that works.
Now, what did this experience teach you? And I'll ask that sort of as a two-parter, the criminal part of this and then being in jail, because I remember you telling me this summer that you came out of jail a much different kind of person.
Yeah, I would say the two things that it actually does teach you is humility and patience. You know, I am talking a good game right now because I'm promoting a book, which again is Bad Trips. Go and buy that right now.
Yep.
But a big part of it is kind of understanding and humbling yourself and seeing like, hey, acting like a knucklehead is only going to get me in this situation along with all these other guys. And when you're in prison, all you want to do is get out. So you will look for any thing and make any pledge or promise with yourself that it takes in order to do that. So humility and patience. Patience comes from, again, dealing with those difficult people and not kind of just rolling your eyes and walking away. Those are the two kind of virtues that are taught, humility and patience.
And how did you find the tone for the book? Because you don't want to glamorize the crime, but you also want to tell it for what it is. You want to use some humor. Like, tell me a little bit about the writing of the book.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to glamorize it, but at the same time, my introduction to cocaine has always been glamorous. It's always been a glamorous drug. It's not like fentanyl or Percocets or something that is being used for pain medication. In my mind, cocaine, up until me going to prison, I'd never met anybody whose life had been ruined by cocaine. It was always like very good-looking people taking it at a party and like these very cool vials at the Vice events. So, you know, my relationship to, sorry, I forgot the question, Richard.
Well, just talking about the glamorization of the crime in the book, you don't really want to do that, but you do want to be honest and truthful with the story.
Right. I told it from the perspective of myself in my 20s, who was kind of dumb and did glamorize it. And I feel that in the last chapter, I do a good job of talking about where I am now and what my thinking is now. And listen, it's very unfortunate that anybody has to go to jail for this. That's one thing I do want to stress. No, I know what it's like for that to happen to your family and for that to happen to yourself. But I also think a big part of it is about accepting personal responsibility for our actions. And 24 is not a baby, but it's also a person who's still kind of developing the world, and maybe we should give those people grace.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe, and we've just got a minute left, but was it a situation where you became a product of kind of a drug-obsessed work environment and the rules, the old rules didn't seem to apply to you?
I mean, yeah, I feel like that's putting too neat of a bow on things, and I feel like it's important to think of Vice Canada as a separate entity than Vice America in some ways, but I do feel like that was part of the culture, absolutely. They definitely didn't try to stop us.
Slava, thanks so much for this.
Yeah,
what a pleasure to speak to you.
Slava
Pastek, the book is called Bad Trips, How I Went from Vice Reporter to International Drug Smuggler. It's available now wherever you buy fine books. It is a great read. I'm rifling through it right now. I don't know if you can hear that. It is a great read. Check it out. And Slava, what a pleasure to speak to you again. I'm sure we'll talk again sometime in the future. And best of luck in the new year. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards on News Talk Tonight on the iHeart Talk Radio Network. When we come back, Mark Critch of Son of a Critch, and this hour is 22 minutes, joins us to talk about his new shows. Stay with me.